Welcome to this special Religious Freedom Day broadcast of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to a very special edition of Washington Watch. Today is Religious Freedom Day, a day set aside not only to celebrate our religious freedom, but also to cultivate an understanding of this fundamental human right, which is the cornerstone of Western civilization. Joining us today for this special broadcast of Washington Watch will be Oklahoma Senator James Lankford, who before coming to Congress was a youth minister serving as director of student ministry at the Baptist Convention of Oklahoma and director of the Falls Creek Youth Camp, the largest youth camp in the United States. Senator Lankford was just recently selected chairman of the Senate Values Action Team. We'll also look at the international implications of religious freedom with former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, a tireless advocate for religious freedom. He is the author of numerous religious liberty laws, including the original International Religious Freedom Act of 1998. In our nation, there is a clear connection between religious freedom and social and political reform. We'll talk with the niece of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., our good friend Alveda King, and pro-life advocate Ryan Bomberger. And for this special occasion, we are broadcasting on the web and FRC's Facebook page in the presence of a distinguished live audience here in the FRC Media Center at our Washington, D.C. headquarters. So welcome to all of you in the audience here today. Let me set the stage for our program this afternoon. Religious freedom is our first freedom. It is enshrined in our Constitution, not as a right granted by our government, but as a right given to us by God to be protected and promoted by those who govern. Religious Freedom Day marks the January 16, 1786 adoption of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, authored by Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson's work became a model for the First Amendment to our U.S. Constitution, drafted in the summer of 1789. In the 232 years since Thomas Jefferson authored the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom, the lives of people around the globe have been enriched by its fruit. Religion and its free exercise have been fundamental to America's existence and to its success. As Jefferson himself said, quote, "No nation has ever existed or been governed without religion, nor can be," end quote. That's a far cry from the Jefferson that liberals are trying to invent, a man, they say, was intent on divorcing government of all religion. In recent years, we have unfortunately seen an escalation of those who want to quarantine religious expression within the four walls of our churches or within the privacy of our homes. But that is not freedom. As President Ronald Reagan observed, quote, "To those who cite the First Amendment as reason for excluding God from more and more of our institutions and everyday life, may I just say the First Amendment to the Constitution was not written to protect the people of this country from religious values. It was written to protect religious values from government tyranny," end quote. And that is why we celebrate this freedom today. But given the government-driven assault on this first freedom that we've seen in recent years, we want to cultivate among the citizens of this blessed country an understanding of how religious freedom is indispensable in the support of all of the other freedoms that we enjoy as Americans. And to help us to do that today, our first guest is Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. He serves on the Senate Committee on Appropriations and the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, as well as the Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Lankford is a big defender of religious freedom. As I mentioned before his time in Congress, from 1995 to 2009, he served as Director of Student Ministries at the Baptist Convention of Oklahoma and Director of the Falls Creek Youth Camp, the largest youth camp in the United States, with more than 51,000 individuals attending each summer. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Very good to be with you. Obviously been on Washington Watch multiple times, never with a live studio audience. This is a great interaction.
Well, it's actually good to see you, not just hear you.
Typically on the phone with you, that's correct.
That is right. Let me just start with this by asking you the question, what is the state of religious freedom in America today?
It's a really odd season for us. Religious liberty and religious freedom and the free expression of your faith has been a given throughout American history. And now for some reason people of our country and in this cultural time are becoming afraid of faith and afraid of people of faith. And so there's this work to be able to quiet in the belief that somehow the separation of church and state, coming from another letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote, clearly not in our Constitution, but another letter that he wrote to the Danbury Baptist Association, this wall of separation, people are trying to put that up and to say, if you're going to have faith, that's fine to have it, but you need to have it in your church, right, by yourself, with your family. Don't bring it to your work. Don't bring it out in conversation. Clearly don't bring it out in the public arena. That was never the intention of the protection of faith in our country. We have always been a nation that you could not only have a faith, but you could live your faith. And that's dwindling away at this point as people are becoming afraid of people of faith.
Well, the logical conclusion of that line of thinking or reasoning or lack thereof would be that people of faith could not be motivated by that faith to make a difference with that faith,
right,
which, quite frankly, you in the conversations that you and I have had over the years, is why you're in Congress.
It's a really stark back-to-back in this particular week to have Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and that recognition now 50 years since he was assassinated, as a pastor, as an outspoken rights activist, as one who spoke on the issues of poverty and of equality and of tearing down racial barriers, clearly from a faith perspective, and he's respected by all individuals within our nation today. And then right after that, a day recognizing religious liberty in our nation and saying, why would we not allow people of faith to participate? There have been earth-shattering individuals like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who brought his faith into the public arena and challenged America by saying, hate doesn't overcome faith, love does. Well, where did he get that? He got that from Scripture and from his own personal faith, and that bubbled out and has transformed our culture in many ways, and we're all grateful for that. We should continue to allow people of faith to be able to live out the expression of their faith and not be afraid of that.
Senator Lankford, today President Trump issued a proclamation declaring today as Religious Freedom Day. And in that proclamation, he said, our Constitution and laws guarantee Americans the right not just to believe as they see fit, but to freely exercise their religion, something you referred to earlier, not just to believe, but act upon those beliefs. And he went on to say, quote, no American, whether a nun, nurse, baker, or business owner, should be forced to choose between the tenets of faith or adherence to the law.
Yeah. No. Again, this goes back to the basic principle. In America, it's not just that you can have a faith, it's that you can actually live the tenets of your faith. And one of the challenges that I talk to people about within the church is not the challenge of the church not able to live the faith. It's that individuals within the church are truly not living their faith outside of their church. The more that we practice integrity and that we practice the basic tenets of our faith, whether we're at home, whether in a business place, whether in recreation, we show a consistency of that faith. And people don't see one person at church and another person at the business,
right,
but they really see faith lived out. That's where faith makes a difference. As I poke people often and say, if church and faith is only something you do on a weekend, that's not a faith, that's a hobby. A hobby is something you do on weekends. A faith permeates everything that you do. And so when people live their faith as it is actually their faith rather than just a hobby they do occasionally, it has an impact in our culture.
And I think that thinking is dangerous when you look at here's one's personal life, one's public life,
right,
and there's this dichotomous view that the two do not intersect. It's hard to determine where someone's going to land if they're operating out of these two different worldviews.
Yeah, and I've had folks that have even poked me before. They've said, you know, you were 22 years in ministry before, but now you're an elected official, so you need to set that aside. And I've smiled at them and said, not only does Article 6 of the Constitution mean I don't have to do that, which is specifically written towards elected officials, protecting the living of their faith. The First Amendment clearly does that. But quite frankly, it's one of our great frustration with people that when they're elected, they become something different. If
right.
I was a person of faith
Absolutely.
At home, I should still be a person of faith here as well. Otherwise, I become something that I'm not.
Right, because people vote for you, elect you based on who you are,
right,
not what you are forced to conform based upon the politically correct standards of Washington, D.C.
Right.
Now, let me address this, or let you address this, Senator Lankford. The issue of religious freedom, while it's sometimes thought to be a partisan issue, it is a bipartisan issue. In fact, you have recently introduced legislation with both Republicans and Democrats to uphold this important principle of religious freedom.
It is, actually. And there are multiple places that we've seen that. And over the course of the history of our country, we've not seen religious liberty be a partisan issue. Go back 3 years ago, when we were dealing with trade agreements with Vietnam and other countries, I thought it was exceptionally important that if we're going to be in a trade conversation with Vietnam, we need to first bring up the issue of human rights, human dignity, and religious freedom. Vietnam has been a serial abuser of people and religious liberty. So I brought up a very clear principle. If we're going to have any trade agreement with Vietnam, we need to first deal with the issue of religious liberty first and to put that in a standard in our trade negotiations. That passed with a bipartisan, overwhelming, unanimous vote that wasn't seen as a partisan issue to say we should lead with that. If there's any piece of leverage we're going to have on a country like Vietnam to say you need to change your human rights principles and your issues of religious liberty, trade should be one of those issues that we use as a leverage. We had bipartisan agreement. We have other examples of that. Frank Wolf has led for so many years in this area in the past, being able to focus and build bipartisan agreements on the issue of religious liberty. We should continue to keep it that way. Again, in our country, for each individual living their faith out, it shouldn't scare someone that I live my faith out and someone who has a different faith is right next to me. As a government, we protect all of those individuals to be able to live out the tenets of their faith. The government shouldn't be partial in choosing one or the other. Neither should we restrict someone. And if you're confident in your faith, why would it intimidate you that the person next to you lives a different one? Live out the principles of your faith and let it make a difference.
Agreed. And these examples that you have given also speak back to what the United States provided in terms of leadership back to the United Nations in 1948. I mean, this is one area where the United Nations has actually gotten it right with their 1948 Declaration of Human Rights, in which they recognize that religious freedom is not an idea just for the Western world. It is a human right that was driven by the leadership of the United States. And I'm hopeful, and I want to ask you if you are, that America is going to restore its leadership position on religious liberty worldwide.
Yeah, I believe we can and we should. This goes back to Reagan's principle of being a city on a hill. There are people around the world that want to be able to just live out the tenets of their faith, that they live in a country that doesn't allow them to have a different faith or has a different perspective and doesn't allow them to have faith at all. We lose track of how different the American experiment still is about allowing people to be able to have a faith and to live it even in greater diversity. Most countries of the world are not like that. We're at our best when we're promoting that. Sam Brownback, who's governor of Kansas, is going through the process right now to be selected as the ambassador at large for religious liberty. It's exceptionally important that he passes through the Senate. Our push is to get him through next week so he can get on the task. So he's working with every embassy in the world to say to every embassy in every location, whether you're Saudi Arabia or whether you're Canada, to say this issue of religious liberty should be a part of the conversation. We're modeling it. We need to set the example for that in America and then help push other nations to consider it within their own nation.
We're going to talk more about that in a moment with Congressman Frank Wolf. Senator, thanks so much for joining us today. Thank you for all that you do on Capitol Hill, leading in the Senate on the values issues, but most importantly, as we recognize today, religious liberty.
Yeah, thanks for taking the lead on this publicly as well, Tony.
All right. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. All right, don't go away, folks, because we're coming back with more of this special edition of Washington Watch with a strong defender of religious freedom, former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, to discuss religious freedom around the globe.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Special edition of Washington Watch today before a live audience here at our media center at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. This is Religious Freedom Day, and that is what we are talking about. In 1998, the Congress passed, and then President Bill Clinton signed into law the International Religious Freedom Act, which, among other things, elevated the importance and the priority of the promotion of religious freedom in America's foreign policy. The law was recently amended to be given even greater influence and significance in international religious freedom and our activity, and its name was changed to the Frank R. Wolf International Religious Freedom Act to honor our next guest, former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
Now, Congressman, early on in your career, you worked to assist Christians in Romania who were being persecuted by that country's dictator, Nicolae Ceaușescu. That work involved removing most favored nation status from Romania as a consequence for their behavior. We were just talking about that with Senator Lankford, about the connection of economic activity and religious freedom. Can you talk a little bit about how that experience shaped your interest in religious freedom and human rights in Congress?
That shaped it tremendously. But before, can I say this? I appreciate Senator Lankford's efforts. If every senator were like Senator Lankford, I think it'd be a lot differently. Secondly, read Dr. King's letter from Birmingham jail. It is one of the most powerful things you will ever read. The trip with me on the trip was current Congressman Chris Smith, who was a hero, and Congressman Tony Hall. We went to Romania in 1985. I had almost never been out of the country. I think I'd been to Canada once before I got elected to Congress. It was a life-changing event. We went into churches, Second Baptist Church, a variety of people came up and put things in my hands, and my husband's in jail, my son's in jail. Ceaușescu was one of the most evil people. It was darker in Bucharest than it was in Moscow. We came back, we got ridiculed by the Ways and Means Committee, and we had one guy with us. The Reagan administration wanted to keep most favored nation status, but one man named Ronald Reagan wanted to take it away. we met with President Reagan, and the story is we took it away, and President Reagan helped us. One person, Reagan said the words in the Declaration of Independence and the words in the Constitution were covenant, not only with the people in Philadelphia in 1776 and 1787, but a covenant with the entire world. So Reagan really went against his own Secretary of Commerce, and we took it away, and it helped collapse the Ceausescu administration.
But from there, it went on to the Soviet Union.
We did. In 1989, Chris Smith and I went to Moscow, and we asked to go into Perm Camp 35. That was the camp that Sharansky was in. I've met with Sharansky a number of times. Sharansky said when he heard Ronald Reagan, they used to tap on the wall with spoons, when he heard Ronald Reagan give 1983 National Association Evangelical Speech in Florida, where he called the Soviet Union what? The evil empire. It changed everything. We went in, it was in summer of 89. We went into the Shizo. We took people out. We interviewed Sharansky's cellmate, who Sharansky had since left. Remember, Sharansky got out, and it was a trade. He was on the Gleinigen Bridge, remember, in Berlin, and they told him to walk straight, and he zigzagged back and forth. A strong man, Sharansky. Literally, we found that amazing things were happening, and the people there knew more about Reagan because of him speaking out. But it was, a life-changing experience. Perm Camp 35 in the Ural Mountains, Gulag. We stayed through the night. Chris Smith and I, we gave out Bibles, and three of the men that we met with, the first man came up to me and he said, "I work for your government." And I came back with the CIA, and they finally... These were three guys who had been working for us who were put in the gulag, and our government had even neglected. But that was, again, a life-changing trip. Again, Chris Smith, God bless. We want Chris Smith to stay in Congress until he was 150 years old. But Chris was with us on that trip.
We're up against a break. We're going to come back and continue this conversation because I want to ask with the perspective that you have, having served in Congress all of these years, going back to the Soviet Union, going back to Romania, these incidents that you just relayed to us, where is religious freedom today? Is the population of the world better protected when it comes to religious freedom, or is religious freedom in greater risk today than it has been in the last 40 or 50 years?
Greater risk. We don't have the same. We had Henry Hyde. Remember Henry? We had Jack Kemp, who would get up on the floor with passion. We had Tom Lantos. They're all gone. I think we have 5.5 billion people living under a religiously repressive nation. From 80 to 81 to 88, if any law firm in this set town said they're going to represent the Soviet Union, Reagan would have cracked down on them. Squires Patton Boggs, have you looked at their list? They represent Sudan. They represent Bashir, who is an indicted war criminal, and yet they have the most powerful law firm in the city representative. They represent China. In China, you have Tibetans in jail. I snuck into Tibet. The Buddhists are being persecuted. The Uyghurs are being persecuted. Catholic priests in jail. Catholic bishops run the house. It is worse off because we don't have the leadership then and now that we really have.
Are you hopeful that we may be at a point of change?
I am.
We're going to take that up on the next when we come back. Folks, don't go away. We're coming back in just a moment with more Washington Watch. Let me encourage you, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, you can watch on Facebook as well. So don't go away. We're coming back with more of our conversation with Congressman Frank Wolf. On the other side of this break. And let me remind you, this is a special edition of Washington Watch as we observe National Religious Freedom Day, a very important day. And I'm going to ask Congressman Wolf about this as well. Relatively new, going back to 1993, the first time that a president issued a proclamation declaring Religious Freedom Day. So we're going to talk about that and more when we return with this special edition of Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's Digital Action Summit celebrating digital pro-life activism. Join us live via webcast on January 19th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 19th at ProLifeCon.com.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
To this special edition of Washington Watch, here before a live audience at the Media Center at the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. My guest, former Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia, the author of the initial International Religious Freedom Act back in 1998. I want to continue our conversation, Congressman. You were talking about what is happening in terms of religious freedom and how so many people are living under repressive governments today. Are you optimistic that we could be at a turning point, that change may be on the horizon? One of the bill was amended, the act was amended to be called the Frank R. Wolf International Religious Freedom Act to impartially strengthened to make the ambassador at large for religious liberty responding directly to the Secretary of State. So there has been some action. Are you hopeful under this administration we may see relief to those being persecuted for their faith around the globe?
I'm hopeful under the administration, and I think you have to give a lot of credit to the administration, particularly to Vice President Pence, what he's done on the Iraqi situation. I mean, they've completely reversed it. I mean, so he is putting aid in to help the Christians to remove. Overall, you know, one, God can do whatever he wants to do. I mean, I pray every night for a spiritual awakening. I have 5 kids. I have 16 grandkids. I've been going around on the college campuses. I'm not that encouraged, though. I got to tell you, when many law firms in this town will take on the most sleaziest, I mean, when Patton Boggs takes on an indicted war criminal, you got to wonder where we're going. Secondly, Sam Brownback is one of the greatest guys we could ever have. His nomination has languished there. He was nominated during the summer.
Right.
Republican House, Republican Senate, and he hasn't really gotten confirmed yet. I was encouraged to hear the senator say. Thirdly, Christmas Bill, H.R. 309, is languishing in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Chris passed it last June. This will have money to investigate the genocide. I had a young Yazidi girl come by and say that the man who held her in Raqqa was an American citizen who used to show her pictures of his wife and kids on her cell phone. Chris can't get his bill out of the Senate. And lastly, I go on to some of these college campuses, Christian colleges. These kids are really not that interested. So, yeah, I think we need some men like Martin Luther King. I think we need pastors to go to jail. I am disappointed in the church. There are exceptions. Cardinal Dolan's been great. There are a lot of exceptions. But overall, the church has fundamentally failed. After the first bill passed, most churches used to have a religious freedom Sunday. They would bring in somebody from Sudan and China. Now they're almost all gone. So I am not that encouraged, but God can move quickly, and maybe the Trump administration and Pence. I mean, Pence is a good guy. I mean, I once sat on the floor and I told Pence, if he ever ran for president, I'd be for him. And so Pence can maybe, but unless there's a change in hearts and minds of the people, and I think the fundamental failure has really been the church. Dietrich Bonhoeffer says, you know, I mean, he looked around, if you don't speak, you don't act. And I don't see the church speaking, and I don't see the church acting. That's why I urge you, if anything comes out of this, read Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail. Every pastor, priest, and rabbi ought to read that letter. Lastly, have you seen the anti-Semitism around the world? There's anti-Semitism. There's anti-Semitism on the American college campuses. This whole boycott, divestiture, and sanctions is soft anti-Semitism. I have not seen any religious leader speak out against it. So God can do it. God can answer a prayer, but I am not that optimistic at this moment.
Well, let's talk then in the few moments we have remaining. What should churches and pastors be doing? What can our listeners do to address this issue? And by the way, this program that is now 5 years on a daily program, in large part, went from a weekly to a daily because of a conversation I had with you a number of years ago about needing to get this information out there and into the hands of Christians. So what do they need to do?
Well, you know, and I appreciate what FRC said. One, pray. When you go with the religious dissidents in other countries, you always say, as you leave, what can I do? They say, pray for me. What else? Yeah. Well, pray.
True.
So you can pray. Secondly, you can work with groups like Voice of the Martyrs and Open Doors. Thirdly, you can contact your congressmen and senators. Have a religious freedom day at church. Invite in different people. I believe this needs to be both a spiritual issue and it also needs to be a political issue. You need to take this into the political environment. I mean, why is Christmas bill being blocked in the Senate? Why is Sam Brownback not? I mean, Brownback was loved by all the senators. So there's a lot that each individual can do. But I think it may really boil down to, and I'll go with them, you really might need to be some pastors and some priests and rabbis to do really what Dr. King did. They may very well have to go to jail to wake up this country. And back to domestic issues. If you're a committed person and you believe a marriage is between a man and a woman, and you work for a high-tech company, and you tell that in the high-tech company, you work for a hospitality, and you're not going to go very far. So we have some fundamental problems in this country as well as outside.
And we have to lead by example, and that's why we must defend religious freedom at home to give hope and encouragement to those around the globe. And I will echo what you said as I was recently in Egypt meeting with Christians there. The first thing they said, pray for us. Pray that we will be bold and courageous, not unlike the words of Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 6. Congressman, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more of this special edition of Washington Watch with Alveda King and Ryan Bomberger on the other side of this break. So don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Facebook post or a tweet or an Instagram picture save a life? At Family Research Council's 13th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Join us via live webcast from Washington, D.C. the morning of Friday, January 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on social media. With this innovative information, anyone can make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 19th at prolifecon.com. Again, visit prolifecon.com for more information.
gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch. So glad that you are with us as we observe, celebrate, and cultivate a better understanding of religious freedom in this country. By the way, breaking news on the religious freedom front. Senator Steve Daines just introduced the Senate Resolution 32 affirming Religious Freedom Day and what it stands for in the Senate. So good to see activity, as Congressman Wolf was talking about, to see members of Congress speak out on this issue and act. And by the way, I'd add another item to that to-do list is to contact your senators and encourage them to support the confirmation of former Senator, now Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas as the ambassador at large for religious freedom. So contact your senators and encourage them to move that forward. Well, when you dissect the major social and political reforms that have occurred in this country, you often find at their heart religious conviction and expression. The abolition of slavery, the civil rights movement, two prime examples of the power of religious freedom. Just yesterday, the nation celebrated the birth of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose preaching stirred the conscience of a nation. And today, we're honored to have the niece of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with us here today. Joining us now is Dr. Alveda King, pastoral associate with Priests for Life and director of Civil Rights for the Unborn. Alveda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm in an airport. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Alveda. So good to have you with us today. I thank you for taking time. I know you're on your way to Washington to be a part of a number of the pro-life events today. Let me ask you, we've discussed this briefly, but the connection between the civil rights movement and religious freedom.
Tony, when we consider religious freedom in the 20th century, of course, I actually marched for open housing, went to jail with many of the leaders. A few of us are still here today. My uncle led that movement, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Uncle M.L., and my daddy, Reverend A.G. King. Now, we were not at that time fighting for religious freedom. For most of the movement, we still had prayer in schools, although it was taken out in 1963. Abortion did not become legal until 1973. So we had a climate where we could pray in the public square and appeal to God, to preach in the pulpits about the Bible and sin. We were dealing with skin color racism, which is a problem based upon the misconception. I'm so sorry about that. please, sorry about that.
You go right ahead.
But dealing with the skin color issues, thinking we're separate races, whereas the Act 1726 says we're created of one blood. But we were not fighting over the Bible and preaching the gospel so much at that time. I believe, remember when Family Research Council was one of the first louder voices saying, something's wrong in America. They're taking away the 501c3s. They're trying to keep the preachers from preaching the truth of the gospel in the inside the four walls and out. So I'm so glad that that alarm was continually sounded, and that many of us, Priests for Life including, we have fought for religious freedom on the matter of preaching the truth about abortion. And we had that lawsuit where we prevailed along with the Little Sisters of the Poor and others. So there is a correlation between civil rights and religious rights and religious freedom. We're not trying to keep others from practicing their beliefs, but we want to be able to practice ours.
Well, you have been such an effective advocate for the unborn. That comes out of your conviction, both your personal experience, but also your religious conviction. And you should not be deprived of that conviction when you walk into the public square.
We should not be. And speaking of that, because on all of your breaks, you're making the appeal to those on Facebook to be involved and be included. Many of you know there's a new movie coming out, Roe v. Wade. I'm one of the executive producers. Facebook has pulled down our ads, the paid ads and the any mention in the non-paid ads. And they do not want the message of the injustice of abortion broadcast, and they are trying to block that. That's another violation of religious freedom. It's very discriminatory. So when we are denied the opportunity and the right to proclaim the gospel freely in this nation that was founded upon in our Constitution, we have that right. It's a terrible injustice. My uncle did say injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and I know we can all agree. So it's wrong to take the life of a baby in the womb. It's wrong to silence the voices of people who want to proclaim our faith. And all of those are civil rights injustices, but they are an injustice against God's will. And so I'm very grateful that this type of information conversation is available, but I'm asking everyone to please support. There'll be other movies coming out that are telling the truth about the social injustice of silencing the voices of faith in this nation. And so we must continue to cry out.
Well, Dr. Avita King, thank you so much for taking a few moments to join us. We look forward to seeing you this week here in Washington, D.C. as we march for the unborn and for the right to life. And I just want to say thank you for all that you have done to stand up and be a voice to all of the nation. And you bring such credibility because of who you are and the family that you come from. And we're grateful for you, Dr. Avita King.
Thank you for this opportunity. God bless everyone.
All right. Dr. Avita King. Well, let's bring in Ryan Bomberger. He is the Chief Creative Officer with the Radiance Foundation, an organization focused on restoring and protecting the rights of the unborn and using a creative message to do that. And he's one of the most creative geniuses I've seen. It's Ryan, it's great to see you. Great to be back on, to have you back on the program.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for the compliments. You build up my self-esteem. Thanks.
Well, look, I don't know that I need to build you. In fact, by the way, I actually write about Ryan in the book No Fear, Tell Your Story. So if you want to hear all of the story, he's not going to be able to get to it in this last segment of the program, but you can read about it in the book No Fear. But religious freedom and your faith plays a key part in what you do.
It does. I mean, entirely. I, as a Christian, as someone who grew up in a small little family, 15, in a Christian home.
Let's talk about that, because it's very important for people to know. Your mother was raped and yet went through the 9 months of pregnancy, gave birth to you. You were adopted into a biracial family with 15 of you.
there. Yeah, it's just 15.
Yeah.
13 kids, 10 of us were adopted.
Well, what kind of vehicle did y'all get around in?
A maxi van, it was actually called.
Okay.
Or a club wagon. There was no such thing as a minivan. That wouldn't have fit all of us.
I threatened to buy my wife a school bus when we had our fifth, but she didn't like the idea.
Yeah. It doesn't maneuver around so well.
Yeah.
But we all fit, and, you know, I had parents who weren't afraid to express their faith, and more importantly, weren't afraid to live it out. And they did that, not just in home, because they were the same people at home that they were in the workplace. They own a store, a retail store, and they lived out their faith in the store. So I grew up witnessing that and understanding that there isn't this separation, there isn't this dichotomy that so many of us want to actually impose upon ourselves.
So what propelled you to step into the public arena in a very effective way, but in taking on, I mean, in the book I tell the story about how the NAACP came after you because you challenged the fact that they were promoting the abortion of black children. That's not like a little organization that you took
on. No, not at all. I mean, I parodied their name. I called them the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People, and for some reason they didn't like it. But that was such a wake-up call to me, though. I mean, obviously it was a free speech issue, and it reminded me, too, just of religious liberty. What good is religious liberty if we're silent? What good is that freedom if we're complacent? And I've just never been the kind of person to just kind of sit back and watch things just unfold or be okay with the status quo. So that was part of the reason why my wife Bethany and I, who, you know, Bethany and I co-founded the Radiance Foundation, but why we felt like we had to get more involved in this fight, because although a lot of these things seem to be happening beneath the surface, there is a lot of erosion that's happening to our First Amendment right. And when I think about it, you know, without religious freedom, America no longer matters. Without life, nothing else matters. So for me, those two issues, religious freedom and, of course, the right to life. Without life, you don't obviously have to worry about religious freedom. But those two go hand in hand, and that's why the Radiance Foundation really see these things as so imperative and why we have to fight for both.
What has been your experience? I mean, you're young. You've been on the national stage now. You're younger than me. Some of my staff is laughing. Don't laugh. But, I mean, have you been a little surprised at what you've seen on the national stage when it comes to the lack of courage and boldness that Congressman Frank Wolf spoke of?
Oh, man. And first of all, I am just a fan. Oh, my goodness. You just are on fire, Congressman Wolf. If we had more Christian Americans who actually cared enough, I mean, this is when you read, a letter from a Birmingham jail from Martin Luther King Jr. He was talking about all the complacency of the church. There was no excuse for people to be complacent, and today there is no excuse for the church to be complacent. We have more access to information than we've ever had before in human history. So it's not like we don't know or that we can't find out what's going on. But it's that complacency, which I understand it from those who perhaps don't know the Lord, for those who don't have any kind of religious upbringing or religious foundation. But for Christians, there's no excuse. This kind of apathy can't be justified at all.
I think it goes back to a lack of courage. And there's a fear. And that's obviously why I wrote the book No Fear, because those who are willing to stand up, And the book is primarily about millennials, younger people. You were an exception. But the fact that when we have that relationship with God and we understand that we're here for a higher purpose and that life has meaning when we are willing to lay our lives down, and that means even on social media, some people are afraid to have people post negative things about them. When people are literally dying for their faith in countries not that far from here, I mean, there is no excuse for a lack of courage and boldness.
There's not. I mean, if you're afraid of being virtually unfriended, perhaps you need to reassess your priorities in life. It's really tragic because it's that complacency, it's that lack of courage that to me is antithetical to Christianity. I mean, at the heart of Christianity is self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice unleashes purpose. And when we're courageous, we enable opportunities to happen that allow others to be set free. And so we just need a lot more people, young, old, and all those of us in between, to rise up and be courageous. Yeah, it may be uncomfortable or it may be painful, or none of that matters, because if we're not willing to speak up, if we're not willing to stand up, then we allow this total erosion of freedom and this oppression to sink in, and for that to become the norm.
Now, I want to be very candid. It can be difficult to stand up. It can be challenging. You went through that. You were challenged as you took on the NAACP. They took you to court. They tried to break you, and it was difficult, but you stood, and you ultimately prevailed.
But you know what? When I think of the ultimate sacrifice, Christ gave his life for us, and there are people literally dying around the world. I mean, just trying to, hiding Bibles. I mean, we can't even, so many of us can't even understand the kind of persecution and the oppression that happened. So yes, it's going to be uncomfortable, but I will say what I went through is really nothing compared to what many Christians around the world go through. And so, I mean, we're told not to fear. Scripture tells us not to have a spirit of fear. Be bold and courageous. And what that might look like for one person may be completely different for the next, but we have to be willing to sacrifice. We really do. We have a culture that is in desperate need to understand what gives it purpose, and it's certainly not binge watching on Hulu or whatever else. We have purpose given to us by the Creator, and I just pray, like Congressman Wolf said, we have to pray. How can we get involved? How can we step up our involvement and be courageous?
You know, that, Ryan, that is a great place to really kind of begin to wind this down as we about to conclude this special edition of Washington Watch, to actually just ask Christians, believers, pastors, just as Ryan just said, ask, what would you have me do? But then the key to that is being willing to be obedient. And when the Lord answers that question, when the Holy Spirit leads and the door opens, you've got to be willing to walk through it and make a difference. This is a time for men and women of conviction and of courage. This freedom that we enjoy in this country, religious freedom, yes, it's essential. Yes, it's foundational, but it can also be lost. Ronald Reagan said it's just one generation away. And these freedoms, if you and I will exercise them and use them, people in faraway places will enjoy them as a result of our willingness and our conviction to stand up. Ryan Bomberger, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you again for the great work you do on behalf of all Americans, but in speaking for the unborn.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Tony.
And folks, I want to thank you for being such a great audience today and being a part of this special edition of Washington Watch. And I want to thank our viewers on Facebook, as well as all of our listeners on our daily program, the stations out across America. And let me once again leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.